You are listening to Marquette University's COVID Convos podcast. In each episode, representatives from Marquette's STEM and humanities communities will bring you insights into the pandemic that you may be missing. Marquette University is located in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the traditional lands of Potawatomi, Ho-Chunk, and Menominee peoples along the southwest shores of Michigamme, North America's largest system of freshwater lakes, where the Milwaukee, Menominee, and Kinnickinnic rivers meet and the people of Wisconsin's sovereign Anishinaabe, Ho-Chunk, Menominee, Oneida, and Mohican nations remain present.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode of COVID Conversations. This conversation is going to be about pedagogy. My name is Professor Brittany Platic. I am an assistant professor in the English department at Marquette, and I am here with Drs. Michael Zimmer and Yoon Choi. Together, we all taught a methods of inquiry class for Marquette's core curriculum in spring 2020, which seems like several years ago now. And we are coming back together this fall to talk a little bit about we have learned about pedagogy during the COVID pandemic and how it's changed the way that we approach pedagogy, whether we are online or in person. And so, Michael and Yoon, can you introduce yourselves?
Sure. Thanks, Brittany. So my name is Yoon Choi, and I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Philosophy.
And I'm Michael Zimmer. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Computer Science.
Okay, thanks both. Really looking forward to getting to talk with you virtually and miss very greatly talking with you in person as we did during the spring. So we have a number of questions to get through today. I will play question asker and hopefully we can get through all of them, but if we don't, oh well. So let's start with a question that I think all instructors have thought a lot about since moving online. What was the hardest thing about the move online in spring pedagogically? I'll start by answering this because for me it was a really immediate answer. I really missed the energy of the classroom and I looked for ways to replicate it online and couldn't find them. So I am teaching entirely online this term. I'm teaching two classes, one big methods of inquiry class and a smaller literature specific lit med class or literature and medicine class. And my teaching style used to be very performative. I would jump all over the room and, you know, I brought a lot of energy through my physical presence into the classroom. And my online classroom doesn't feel like that anymore. It feels more like a cozy, slightly unwieldy coffee klatch. And because I don't perform anymore, I've had to completely reevaluate what successful teaching energy feels like.
Yeah, so I think for me, that learning experience was deferred to this semester. So last semester, when everything shut down all of a sudden, I had a grad seminar. And I mean, it felt very strange to see them all online, but actually the course didn't essentially change in its structure or its content or the way it was being evaluated. And then there was our methods of inquiry course, which was, I think, just an emergency job, learning how to put that content online and having to meet our third cohort of students entirely through like numbers on names on a screen, never seeing their faces. I mean, that was all sorts of bizarre. I'm not sure yet that I've learned anything from that, primarily because, yeah, I think it was just a rush job. We didn't have time to think about it, and I still don't know what worked and what didn't really work there. So now this semester, I'm actually teaching in person, but I've been kind of being prepared to move online, apparently unnecessarily. And that's been a learning experience. And I still have to think about this for next term when I will be online. I still don't think I've really cracked this, but I am sort of appreciating the ways in which it is very difficult and very different. So.
Yeah, I think the MOI class just on its own is a jarring experience because these students are rotating through three different instructors or three different disciplines, and all of a sudden this pivot to online was just made it even more disruptive. And I've had experience teaching online quite a bit and even asynchronously when I was at UW-Milwaukee before joining Marquette. But in all those cases, that students are signing up for that. They know what they're getting into, you know, and this sudden shift, which seemed like actually so contrary to the pedagogical values that I've learned to already embrace at Marquette, I think was really hard on all of us. So I think that the main thing that I think each of us had to do in the spring was to like simplify our expectations, simplify our deliverables, and just, you know, hoping that we pulled it off. So.
Yeah.
It did feel like there was a lot of hope involved, especially since, as Yoon said, we were getting so much less feedback from not meeting our students in person, sometimes not even seeing their faces. That had implications for how we are now teaching this fall when we did know a little bit more about our modalities going in. So maybe the next thing we could talk about is what we expected for this fall semester based on what we learned in spring or felt like we wanted to learn in spring. And how did that compare to what the reality of teaching during the pandemic in these modalities was? And I guess I'll jump in first again here. One thing that I was really afraid of during this term, because my classes were online, is that my students would be completely checked out. And that's not just because my classes are online, it's also because the world is on fire and I expected my students to be paying more attention to the news than my class. And I didn't think that they would want to do the reading and they would have trouble getting through it. And it has been surprisingly and delightfully the opposite. My students really crave interaction, even online interaction, which they don't feel is as dynamic as a real classroom. My students do the readings every week. They seem to do all of them. They are really excited to talk about them, and they're excited to talk to me and their peers. And I wasn't expecting that, and it has been a really pleasant surprise. It does make, now that I think about it, a certain amount of sense because they all feel very isolated right now.
Yeah, so it's funny because both my expectations were the reverse of yours, and then the reality is the reverse of yours. But again, I'm teaching in person right now, so maybe there's a sense in which some things could be expected. But I was thinking that students would be like starved for contact, for social contact, and very keen to learn. I mean, they chose to come and like, you know, some hazardous time to school. And I was like, they're braving their lives to come to class. They must be super keen. So yeah, I expected them to be sort of very vibrant and engaged and active. And I think I underestimated the weirdness of being in person, but being like 6 feet apart with these muffling masks and not really knowing what the specific rules are, right? Like, if you have to raise your voice to say hello to the person sitting next to you, should you do that or not, right? I mean, not everything is just so weird. So that, like, one of the striking things is, like, before class starts, everybody sits there in dead silent. There's no chatting to their neighbors. It's very puzzling, right? Yeah, and so it's very difficult for them, I think, in ways I didn't expect, and maybe they didn't expect. And they're, like, hungry for friendship and stuff, but they don't know how to do it. They don't know what's allowed. So I think it's actually been difficult. Like, the collaborative work isn't taking off. I made a lot of room for class discussion, which is often deserts of silence. Yeah, not as I expected it to be, but I think if I had thought through the sort of physical reality of teaching in person, I might have been able to predict some of these. But yeah, this was my attempt to get over the alienation from the MOI last semester, the weird feeling of nobody knowing each other. And so I aggressively tried to include a social component in this course, but it's not really a shining success.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience. The class I'm teaching is a class on data ethics. And there was already an online version of that class for graduate students and some working professionals. So I kind of knew how to do that and had that in place. And then my in-person class, which I taught last year for the first time, was amazing. And I just loved the energy. It was the kind of interaction. My first semester at Marquette, and the intelligence and the interaction of these students was really motivating for me as an instructor. And I had a group of students that wanted to be here this fall, wanted to be in person, but I'm having that same kind of reaction. They're quiet. We're all in masks. Nobody's just happy. We're all more than 6 feet apart. And it's just, it's one of these weird, long, narrow rooms or wide rooms. So we're already just too far apart from each other. And it's just been, yeah, it's been frustrating, and it's not their fault. And it's hard for us to sort of, you're right, it's hard to predict this, you know, and we didn't really have this summer to plan because we weren't really sure what our format was going to be. And I know the students want to be there. I've shifted a few classes online because we had a couple weeks where between my health and their health, I just didn't want to be in person, and I could tell they were bummed out by that. So yeah, it's been interesting just trying to get things to align with what I was expecting.
Yeah. One thing I really wonder, and I wonder if you guys have a thought about this, is whether or not our students are going to change their opinions about what modalities they would prefer going into next term based on this term, because I've heard similar things from other people teaching in person, that it's really difficult to hold a discussion because of the distancing, because of the masks, and students just end up kind of giving up and feeling isolated. Whereas the people that I know who are teaching online, many of them report that their students are engaged or are really taking to the format. And I'm wondering if that's going to change students' own opinions about what they want to do, because supposedly one of the reasons we still were offering in-person classes was that students really wanted it. And do you guys think that that'll shift?
I think that might be a change. I mean, it's student was mentioning, you know, you said how they were starving for things. And I remember with my in-person class, I already took a small class in a large distanced classroom, and I split the class into two groups because I wanted to be even safer. So we're only meeting once a week, each group, instead of twice a week altogether. So already my pedagogy has changed because of that. And it was after about 3 weeks of class, I finally said, all right, there's only six of us in the room right now. Let's just turn into a circle and just, you know, don't talk at someone's face and let's have a discussion. And they loved it. I mean, that's like they finally opened up. But I felt really scared doing that because it just didn't seem like the way that we're supposed to approach this. I'm kind of concerned that maybe students are going to be, you know, or maybe they're recognizing that for certain subjects or certain topics, it works better than others. Because I have had students in my online version of this class really embrace the discussion threads in Teams, which surprised me. And they're owning it, and they're just posting great comments and having a discussion, you know, that I'm not seeing in my face-to-face classroom right now.
Yeah, one of my students wrote this comment, I wish we could just push our chairs into a circle and then just talk. And I'm like, yeah, me too. But the thing is, if you've been keeping an eye on those surveys that the university keeps doing, the students prefer their in-class courses, like, strongly. So I don't know how to factor that in. It's something like they get significantly better marks than all the other modalities, including mix and including all online asynchronous. And that's surprising to me. I feel like people who have been teaching online have been finding it more rewarding than people who have been teaching in person. But I guess the data suggests that's a little too quick. I don't know.
Yeah, or maybe that, like, our impressions of our classes are really different from our impressions of our students might just not be accurate to what their actual feelings about the online classes are, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be fascinated to see the evals at the end of this term. Oh, fascinated and terrified to see the evals at the end of this term. So maybe to kind of, like, move on here, just continuing to think about how we have changed the way that we've approached teaching this term, what are the biggest differences in your pedagogy that you've made for fall 2020?
I'll start on this. I mean, one thing that I've been really worried about has been just stress levels and anxiety. And so it's uncertainty about the semester, how long it's going to last, the election, you know, just everything, you know, that we didn't know in August what things were going to look like. And so I try to find a way to design a syllabus to reduce, you know, points of stress, but still achieving, you know, my learning outcomes and still trying to engage with the material. And so that meant, you know, simplifying some of the readings, simplifying some of the assignments, and meant simplifying my grading, because I was going to be under just as much stress as my students are, because I have, you know, kids I'm trying to get through the day at home, you know, like everyone else. It's just all of our lives are harder. So just finding that right kind of balance. And now in retrospect, I do kind of wish I had kind of managed both, like a hybrid version of my class. Like, we're going to meet in person, but we're also going to try to do some of that online engagement. And I'm a little bit worried because I've split my course into smaller groups So now they're knowing fewer people. You know, they're seeing, they're getting fewer opinions. Their interactions are different. And now I wish that maybe I should have put a rotation in place or something like that to try to manage that. So it's been interesting to see how things are playing out.
Yeah, that's mirrored in my experience too. I had initially started with my online literature and medicine class, so my upper level literature class, which is mainly juniors and seniors, they're not English majors, they're not in my field. I had thought that they would want to have a lot of small group interaction, so I did try that kind of rotating, you know, meet in a small group and then come back to class, but the students ended up overwhelmingly preferring a kind of big group discussion with all 29 of them there at once, and I found that really surprising, and I'm still trying to account for it, because normally that I wouldn't expect students to prefer that. So students' preferences have surprised me, and I've altered my pedagogy to try to give them more of the kind of discussion that they clearly find the most rewarding. And the other thing that I have found that I've done also echoes Michael's point about being more flexible. So I have become more compassionate about deadlines and extensions, and I've always had a fairly flexible extension policy. Students can get an extension with no reason needed as long as they ask far enough in advance. They're adults. I expect them to make decisions about managing their schedule so long as they let me know. And in this term, I have moved even more towards basically giving students the opportunity, if they are passionate about completing their assignment, to let them do so. And I've done that in part because my class has been hit really hard by COVID. I have had friends, family, roommates in the ICU. Some of them have experienced multiple family deaths. And that's kind of on top of the overarching anxiety and isolation of living through COVID in an election year in 2020, which is, there are so many things that are happening right now. And I have found it mentally difficult to kind of handle the stress. So I can't even imagine what they're going through. You know, some of them are taking 6 classes and I'm only teaching 2. And this made me realize, however, that while this year does feel, and I think is especially hard for everybody, you know, even beyond 2020, life was really hard and is really hard for many of my students, maybe in ways that aren't visible to me. So I think even after COVID is over, and even after 2020 is over, and we have moved hopefully into a better, less terrifying universe, I'm going to keep these policies in place, because I have learned more about, I think, my students' lives this term than I ever have before.
Yeah, again, that's really interesting, because I think I've been putting in the same sorts of procedures. Everybody's saying, you have to be more compassionate. And so, you know, I think it's really important. But then this semester, I have first years, and I wonder, it's not clear to me that I'm actually doing them a service by being extremely lenient. So I think like freshmen always have some hard lessons to learn when they get to college. And I think they're prepared to learn it when they're freshmen, they're getting it, but they absolutely verily are not. And I wonder whether this works for them, right? So like I let them redo things, I let them turn things in, I accept things even when they're late. And that's not really the way the world works. And, you know, it's normally right around when they're first years that they have to learn how to be a bit more responsible and to take ownership for their choices and their mistakes, right? And so it always felt kind of strange for me to play that role, because it was very sort of do as I say and not as I do. But I eventually came to think that that was a useful part of getting through freshman year. So I became very clear about my expectations, and like things like I won't respond to emails after 9 p.m., right, for example. But now it's like I've just let this all go, right? And so students continue to think that professors should be on demand, right? They continue to think that deadlines are things that like a good excuse can get moved, right? And it's not always the case. So I'm just a bit conflicted about this. I do think my freshmen are having especially difficult time, but I'm not sure I've found the right balance between sort of making extra space for them and still, I don't know, introducing them to the kind of independence that they came here for, and that comes with some liabilities, right, and the possibility of bad choices. So I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing here.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and this maybe kind of the level of student you're teaching does matter here, because for me, all of my my students in my literature and medicine class are juniors and seniors, and if they ask for extensions, they do so well in advance and then turn them in exactly when they said they would. So it's like they've already learned the skill of managing their schedules that maybe you in your first years haven't learned yet. So, and the feel is really different teaching a bunch of students who know their way, like they know their way around, might know what they're doing. A lot of them have very intricately scheduled days where they're going to complete X assignment at X time, and if something happens, they have to move it, but they have scheduled a block for it, right, which is not necessarily the feeling you always get with folks who are new to university.
Right. I mean, they always seem really young, and they always kind of pick it up, right? So I'm curious to see if this generation does. I think they've had such a strange experience, what with like all the celebration and pomp of high school being snatched from them, and then like college being this really weird experience. But like, if you haven't experienced differently, you don't even know how weird it is. And so I do wonder what they'll seem like when they are juniors and seniors. Hopefully it'll be okay and not a lifelong trauma.
God, I hope not. I hope that that this affects them in ways that strengthens them as opposed to is something that they have to drag around for the rest of their lives. Let's see. So there were a couple of other things that were different from my expectations, or no, actually the same as my expectations. So one thing that I did expect going into this term after the spring that was absolutely true is that I could not teach the same amount of material in my discipline. English is very small discussion-based classes usually, and I tend to teach poetry and lengthy novels, and you just can't talk about as much in an online class because there's tech issues that means whatever discussion you have is going to be greatly lengthened over, you know, what might have taken 10 minutes in person takes 20 online. So I drastically pared down my syllabus and going to keep doing that until we're back in person because it seems to have worked.
Yeah, one thing that I think I learned was how to better organize and utilize the learning system. What's the phrase? I don't even know the phrase. Learning software management system. Which, I was fairly resistant to and used minimally before, but I was, I think, a little impatient with my students because they seem to refuse to explore this very logical site that I had set up for them. And so like things that I thought were in obvious places turned out to be unfindable repeatedly. And finally, I think I understood something about the student situation, and that's, you know, that with D2L we all use it, but we are all suddenly using it a lot more the way I am, and we're all kind of personalizing a little bit so that I mean every site is kind of the same but kind of different, and that must be maddening, right? I have no patience for websites that I can't figure out immediately how to navigate, and so just kind of realizing that made it easy to be a little more, what was that word again, compassionate, and to field their questions a little more quickly, and actually with understanding. And so now I've got massive redundancies on the site. Everything is about 10 billion places, and it strikes me as totally illogical, right? But I think it's working better. So I think that is something that I do differently and that I'll keep doing differently, and that I think I learned from encountering their difficulties.
Yeah, I think that was a lesson even from the spring where they talked, I remember them mentioning to us about messaging and consistency, and I've taken that to heart where I send them a message on Sunday, I send them a message on Wednesday, they know exactly, they're all the same format, it's just, this is now here, walking it through, not, trying not to be paternalistic about it, but also giving them a predictable way of here's the plan for the week. I did have my students beg me to move the discussion off of D2L and into Teams because D2L discussion boards are just terrible. And so we did, and that's worked out great. We can use a wiki function. There's all kinds of different ways you can kind of integrate different things. And so I think that's all worked out pretty well. I mean, I'm happy with how resilient they've been. Again, I have upper class students and graduate students, and most of my graduate students in the program I'm teaching in have a day job too. And so they can relate to the difficulties I think that we all have probably differently than a first year student could. So I think that actually works in everyone's favor, and we kind of get a sense of that. One other thing that I've noticed that I've done and the students have seem to really appreciate is just like more personal notes and just like, you know, how are you doing? Like, my quiz for this week is literally like, this is a hard week, so just give me an answer. I'm like, are you okay? Are you not okay? You don't want to answer.
That's a nice idea.
Just do that and you get full credit and let's move on. You know, so it's, and it's not meant to be a throwaway, but it's meant to be like, you know, we're all just people doing this. And every once in a while, you know, I'm just going to be a human for you and not your teacher. You know, and they really seem to enjoy that. And I did also mid-semester survey. I think we did this in the spring too, where we just said, how are things looking? You know, are the readings the right level? Is the workload okay? Am I doing okay? What can we do? And, you know, you both get good feedback and you also just get the appreciativeness that you as an instructor are recognizing that you might need to change course too, you know, and getting that feedback. So some silver linings in all this chaos, I guess.
Yeah, that's interesting. For the kind of acknowledgement of students' emotional lives is also something I found myself doing a lot more. I open every one of my classes with a 10-minute check-in where I ask students to just say what they're doing this weekend, how they're feeling about COVID. During the time when the dorms were quarantined, they all were either in one of those dorms or had friends in those dorms. So they were sharing all of their many feelings about the quarantine situation, and that they've really appreciated that opportunity just to, you know, talk with each other as much as talk with me. But the other way that I have tried more to acknowledge my students' emotional lives in the classroom, because that has been another shift for me pedagogically this term, is really disciplinary specific. Like, it's very English and literature specific. So the main argument, or one of the arguments of my scholarly book, is that literature helps us survive hard times, and that's important. It's one of the reasons we read. But this is a principle that prior to this year, I didn't enact as loudly in my classroom because I was anxious about reinforcing this idea that literary study is just book club, basically an unserious field with no critical tools. So in most of my previous classes, I'd leaned, when defining our discipline, really heavily on skills, on this idea that what literature does is teach students to read and write with rigor, and that's what made us a field of scholarly standing. I actually think that that's only partially true now, and those skills are definitely part of why literature matters and why we teach it. But keeping feeling out of my classroom, keeping the emotional response to literature less in my classroom, does as much of a disservice to literature as shallow dismissals of the discipline do. And maybe even more, because pretending feeling isn't a huge part of why we read or consume media just kind of accepts the idea that emotions are factual and antithetical. A good reason. They're not. And this was actually the point that I made in the portion of our methods of inquiry class on reasoning, that reasoning and emotion have a complicated relationship to one another, and it isn't automatically antithetical. And a purportedly but never actually emotionless reason is not the only or even most necessarily legitimate pathway to understanding the world. So COVID has really changed this for me, because now I am inviting my students to bring their feelings more into the classroom than I ever was before, and being very adamant about the fact that literature is a toolbox for working through feelings, and that is okay and is actually a good thing.
So this is so fascinating to me, because I think I wanted to be, I tend to like to keep my distance from students in a certain clear way, right? Like, I'm interested, but there are going to be boundaries, right? But I actually intended to be a bit more open and curious and active in asking questions. And I also was thinking over the summer, my strategy for teaching introductory philosophy was always to start with topics that students feel fairly neutral about, so that they can just learn the skills when their deep-seated beliefs are not up for, you know, debate here. And so, you know, and then we would gradually get to the same nature of faith, right? Whether one can argue that God exists, whatever, right? But this semester, I thought that students, you know, were feeling the shortness of time and life, and we should get down to, like, the many, many, many burning issues around us. So I actually had a survey in the beginning of the semester when I was asking students, like, what do you think are some of the scariest or biggest problems facing us, right? What are some topics on this provisional syllabus that you don't see that you'd like to see? And then I sort of completely redesigned the syllabus to include their stated interests, right? And I also have been starting out every class, well, I used to, asking them how they feel and stuff. And then again, like, the result was not exactly what I expected. So first of all, they're always fine. They're always two thumbs up. And so I think that somehow they think that that's what I want to hear, which I guess. But that wasn't, you know, not really. Not if it's not two thumbs up. And also, it shouldn't be two thumbs up. Right? But it's kind of sweet that I get it, right? But also, we're not having serious discussions about how we feel. Either that or they really do feel great, right, all the time. So.
Which would also be weird.
Yeah. Which would also be very weird, yes. But also, like, when they, although they said things like, oh, misinformation is one of the biggest threats, when we had a discussion about truth, they had very little to say. Maybe it was still too abstract. Maybe something about learning philosophical methods while talking about these things that felt like so, I don't know, pertinent. Was difficult. I'm not sure. Also, this is the first time I taught truth, and truth is not an easy topic to teach philosophically, but it just didn't work very well. So, yeah, I'm not sure what to do about this, right? I really thought students would want to talk about very topical questions, but maybe it feels a bit unsafe for it's like too much going on to learn this entire new way of arguing while stating things that seem very personal and perhaps like they might get canceled by their peer. I don't know. But it hasn't worked out the way I expected it would work out, which is kind of the way it's been working out for you, Brittany. So I don't know what to do, whether to try it again or not.
But. I mean, I think that raises such an interesting pedagogical question, because what in many ways we are asking students to do is toggle between the kind of abstract concept we're trying to teach them about and then the sometimes personalized, sometimes topical illustration of that. And I wonder if that is tougher for students now just because the personal topical stuff feels so pressing. It's so exigent that it's really difficult to kind of take them from that lower level to the higher level. And or maybe it doesn't feel as urgent to them at the higher level, even though we know that that higher level is extremely important and shapes so much of how students encounter that lower level. And I think it does actually, that leads me into my next question and also says something about the way that I'll end up answering it. I think that I have been greatly helped here by the fact that my disciplinary sort of focus is literature and medicine. So students come into my class automatically assuming that whatever abstractions we're going to eventually get to in the class are going to be things that are germane to their lives right now in a way that I think other, like, if that isn't your specialty, you might have to make that case to them, and that case might be more difficult for them to digest. So I guess the question that I would ask about that then is, in terms of topicality, how much have you guys woven COVID as a topic into your classrooms, either structurally or topically? Like, where is it, what work is it doing in your pedagogy?
Well, I remember in the spring when we did our MOI and our topic was reason and rationality, and one of our organizing sort of cases throughout the semester was misinformation as it relates to anti-vaccine campaigns on social media or on different kinds of internet platforms. And right away in the spring, you could see that same thing happening with, you know, rumors about COVID vaccines or treatments and what was showing up when you searched YouTube or when you went on Instagram and what kind of information or bad information. So we were able to pivot in my discussions, at least a little bit, about COVID and what was emerging right then. But I guess I've been lucky because my class around data ethics, and I'm almost always looking for whatever's happening right at the moment to help sort of ground some of the broader concerns that I want our students to understand when it relates to big data and data science and society. So we've been able to talk about things like tracking apps and medical surveillance and student surveillance and workplace surveillance, and the idea that there's all these articles that AI is going to help us solve COVID, and, you know, all these different kinds of things that, again, are just exactly the kinds of things that I like to critique in our coursework. And one thing we did just the other week is an exercise called, that we call a design fiction, where we take an idea of like an app or a platform. And let's just, what if we made a Black Mirror episode about COVID check? You know, what would COVID check on steroids look like if campus really wanted to double down on managing things? So we were brainstorming things like, you know, automated GPS and Wi-Fi tracking of where all students are, keeping a record of any time you're within 6 feet of another student, or it'd be a record already, you know, created somewhere, automated temperature monitors. And then I mentioned to students, and there was just a story on NPR the other week about universities increasingly monitoring wastewater from dorms, because one of the earliest ways to identify an outbreak is through stool samples. Mm-hmm. So what if we had smart toilets and the app on your phone was able to monitor, you know, your output in order to gauge, you know, whether or not we have. So we started just going with that, and how could this just get out of hand? And it was just a good way for them to see, just, you know, we're playing around with, you know, in my course, you know, technology and data has benefits and it has detriments, and they were able to really kind of latch on to COVID check as a good example. So that turned out to be a sort of a helpful way for us to integrate it.
Yeah, and I mean, my class, the upper-level literature class that I'm running right now is called Literature and Medicine, and even in previous pre-COVID iterations of this class, our last novel was an 1826 story by Mary Shelley called The Last Man that was about a global pandemic that kills everyone. So I taught this class in spring 2020, and the syllabus had been set since the previous summer, and students thought that I was prophetic, which unfortunately I'm not, but I'm never taking that novel off of the syllabus because it is extremely topical. So because of the nature of my classes, I do feel like we talk about COVID an awful lot. And I, you know, my teaching schedule from this year going forward, I'm going to be teaching one section of this class pretty much in perpetuity. And I feel like it is always, for the next decade, it's going to be relevant to the experience of students who lived through COVID or who remembered COVID. So I fell into topicality accidentally in some ways. And now that I'm here, I'm making the most of it, which is not the same thing as doing it deliberately, but.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So I think I wanted to talk about it a bit more, but like I said, my students, they seem like, if I ask them how they're doing, and it's specifically a question about COVID, right? Like on the, you know, on the heels of some quarantine, or like some dorm quarantine, they're fine, right? They say they're fine. So I haven't been talking specifically about COVID, but actually I've been talking around it quite a bit. And I sometimes think that some of the things they do say, like I know that some of them have expressed loneliness and the difficulty of meeting people and stuff. This is COVID. They're not identifying it, right? They're not quite making that connection. And so I guess my first answer to this question was, I'm not really talking about COVID, but I'm doing the same thing that they are. I'm talking about COVID, but not directly, right? So I keep trying to sort of bring in examples that I think are topical, but they more take the form of like talking about the election, which is another way of really talking about COVID in a sense. But those, like, so for example, like I tied in a discussion we had about negative and positive liberty to the stuff about masks, right? In what sense is it or is it not a constraint of your freedom if you're required to wear a mask, right? And the discussion didn't particularly ignite, right? I kind of thought it might, right? Or I had pictures of the Milwaukee elections from April, and we're talking about forms of injustice and voter suppression and the ways in which it could take structural forms. And again, didn't particularly ignite any more than other topics. So I almost think my students came of age like with COVID just a reality. And so, yeah, I talk about COVID a lot, but I hide it because I don't think they particularly want to talk about COVID. So I talk around it. And I think that they're not really aware how much of their experience is entirely structured right now by COVID, and what's so very atypical about their experience. So yeah, we talk about it, not directly.
So maybe let's end our discussion here by talking a little bit about what our experiences have been. We've talked a lot about what we expected of students and what we feel like they're going through. And maybe we could end by talking a bit about what students' impressions of what we're going through might be and what we would want students to know about what our experience as professors has been this term. So if you could tell students, give students a message about what profs are facing this term, what would you say to them as a general body? Because I know that students coming from different disciplines and different years will have different expectations.
Yeah, maybe I'll start this one off. So I'm torn about this. I don't know if I actually want my students to know this, but I often think it, right? And what I often think is, do you guys have any idea how sort of afraid I am to be here and how unsafe it feels and how many of your instructors did not want to teach in person but are teaching in person? I don't know what would be gained by having them know, but I do wonder if they know. And I'm torn, but I often look at them and I think, I don't think they have any idea that I feel like they're a bit of a threat to my personal well-being here. And it's like a difficult thing to, because I am fond of them, but I actually sometimes I'm like, my goodness, they're all breathing. It's a strange thing, and I don't really know what would be gained by them knowing it, but I think it would be strange for them not to know it in a way. But maybe one thing that's a bit more specific that I definitely would want them to know, especially because talking about that survey again, a lot of students expressed some dissatisfaction with the way their instructors were handling the technology and stuff, and they thought better training with teams might be in order. And I think that those are legitimate complaints. But I think one thing that would be helpful if they knew is that, like, the technology is just changing on us. Like, it is actually the fact that Teams has and then doesn't have and then does have some functionality. And we never know until we open it up. And so if they knew that, like, there is nothing to be done about this on our end, then the survey kindly suggest that we all get a bit trained with the technology, right? Which is what I would have thought if I were in their shoes, too, but which I think it would just help if we just took it all out of our hands and just like ask Microsoft, right? But yeah, that's my two cents.
Well, I feel like that the common theme between those two things is students knowing about the conditions of our labor as professors, which I actually think is really important. And I think that it isn't an automatic thing for any student to think about. When you're in a class, you're often focused on your experience as a learner, and you're not thinking, oh, the person who is teaching me is doing a job that has material conditions that structure their ability to perform that job well. And I think that the sooner students can learn that, the better they're going to be, not just for our sakes, but for their own, because it helps them understand how the university functions better as something that isn't just a place of learning, but is also a place of employment. And so on that note, I think that, so I would, you know, second both of Yoon's points, because I do think it is valuable. I think it is valuable for students to know how scared a lot of their professors are right now, in part because I'm sure students are scared too. Like, thinking back, Yoon, to what you said about the students giving you the thumbs up when you ask them if they're okay, mine started off by doing that, and then a couple of times I was like, guys, are you really okay? And then they were like, no, we're actually just completely fraught with anxiety, but we don't want you to think that we're not doing okay because we're afraid that's going to somehow affect the way that you understand our performance in this class. And I'm like, okay, just like, for the record, it's okay if you're not okay. And I feel like I have to keep telling them that. And I think applying that message to ourselves is not necessarily a bad thing. But one thing that I would add to that is that the students who are disappointed with online learning and do feel like their profs don't know the tech as well or the tech isn't working, I do want students to know that we agree with them largely. All of us miss the classroom that functions normally as opposed to socially distanced with masks where we're yelling at each other across 6 feet gaps. But we miss the classroom and we can't wait to get back, but the kind of teaching that we are giving now, even though it feels probably to many students as if it is not as good and feels that way to us too, it is, because it is a new modality that requires a lot of tech and a lot of advanced planning. Like, online teaching requires 3 times as much advanced planning as teaching in person. You can't wing it in the same way because you can't be as responsive. It means that most professors are working at least 3 times as hard to try to give their students a meaningful pedagogical experience. And that I know that it seems crappy that you can work three times as hard at something and still yield a poorer result than doing it in the way that you had done it. Like, that sucks as a logic. That is what so many professors are encountering. And I would want students to know that that is structuring the way that they receive our classes. There's a vast gap between effort and results here. And please be mindful of that for your professor's sake.
Yeah, I look back in spring when we all suddenly had the shift, and it was like students and instructors, we were in that together, and we had both this like shared misery and like, this sucks, let's find a way to finish the semester and we'll just slog through. And I'm worried that with how the summer played out from the student perspective, they just may have thought, all right, we had the whole summer to gear up and let's go and let's run, and they may not have recognized that, you know, we weren't sure as instructors what the fall was going to look like. Decisions weren't being made until, you know, later on. And that, you know, just like you're saying, we can't just pivot, you know, on a dime and suddenly be an expert online instructor. That's just not how this operates. And so now I'm looking ahead to the spring where I'm going to be teaching an MOI with, you know, 300 students in it, and it's going to be all online. Mm-hmm. And guess what, students? I haven't had time to prepare yet. So we're going to do a good job, and we're going to teach you what we want to teach you. But if I could say one thing to them, it's just like, everything is hard, and we're not even going to be ready for spring in the ways that we normally would be. I think any one of us are recognizing that those are some unique challenges that are not going to disappear on Tuesday. They're not going to disappear when grades are submitted this semester. That it's just going to continue to be kind of tough for us. And I feel bad about that, but that is the reality, unfortunately.
Agreed. And they could still be better or worse on Tuesday.
Trying not to think about that. I definitely included a note to my students in this week's lecture to reach out if they're not okay. So again, material conditions of labor include political institutions. Yep. So... Well, thank you guys both very much. I know that we are at about an hour, so we should probably say goodbye. Is there any last thing that either of you would like to say?
No, thank you, Brittany, for organizing this. And it's so nice to catch up with you guys again.
Yeah, I miss seeing you. So this was real nice.
Yeah, I miss seeing you guys both in person. So thanks so much to the both of you for being willing to talk through technology on Teams about pedagogy. And listeners of COVID Conversations, thank you so much for joining us. And here's to hoping that at some point in 2020, we will be moving back, or 2021, pardon me, because time has meaning, that we'll be moving back towards something that looks a little bit more normal. Thanks much, and bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of COVID Convos. You can learn more about this podcast and the research being done at Marquette University by visiting the Research and Innovation website at marquette.edu. You can reach the podcast via email at covidconvos@marquette.edu. Music for this episode is Phase 2 by Xylo Zyko.